that does bring into consideration our air quality. And as you can see, anybody can see that takes a look out there, air quality is pretty darn bad. And right now, the Department of Environmental Quality has the air quality index at 115 today on Friday. That means it's unhealthy for sensitive groups, and that's projected to stay about the same through Saturday and then moderate a little bit to moderate. That's where the AQI drops below 100 on Sunday. I'm feeling the effects of that smoke
out there. My lungs feel that. And, you know, our air quality is really dependent on the winds and the smoke that blows in oftentimes. And I believe this smoke is mostly coming from the large fires that are off in Washington and Oregon. And they blow smoke here. They settle in our basin-like area. And then they don't disperse until we have more winds. So wind helps, but wind also brings that red flag warning that can create power shutdowns.
Oh, sure. Yeah. The winds, of course, they give oxygen to the fire and they make things a lot worse that way. Well, let's get on to news around town here. So 3 weeks after pausing the downtown paid parking program that's drawn intense commentary, the Sandpoint City Council voted 5-1 on Wednesday to discontinue the use of the downtown street parking kiosks. But they do want to include an option to purchase additional time if you're parking in the 2-hour limited parking area downtown via text or app rather than at one of those kiosks. The downtown's 2-hour parking zone will continue essentially as it has for many years with, quote, strict enforcement, according to the motion that was offered by Councilor Kyle Schreiber. And that motion also instructs the city staff to move forward with a plan to offer free permits for city residents starting in 2027. That's after the current $20 resident permits have elapsed at the end of the year. And in also introduce a hardship pass for Bonner County residents. And that would give some financial assistance to people that just really can't afford to pay for county residents $35 a year.
I think the permits are for the city lot and the city beach area that still have the parking regulations that were recently passed in force.
Right. The action on Wednesday was mainly for the kiosks on First Avenue, Second Avenue, and Cedar Street. The parking at the city-owned lots that includes the city beach and the downtown city parking lot and Ponderay Bay Trail to head. That's going to continue to operate with the kiosks for, and you have to pay or have a permit to be there. So while the city's parking policy has raised intense opposition via social media, and there's also been an announced campaign to recall Mayor Jeremy Grimm and Council President Deb Ruhl. But at the Wednesday council meeting, only a few people showed up to comment, despite all that hundreds and hundreds of really kind of tough commentary that's been going on Facebook and social media. Other city news, new plans for Averill Hospitality's resort hotel adjacent to City Beach are beginning to move through permitting, with city staff providing its first round of comments on the proposal, the revised proposal, I should say. The company in 2024 initially presented plans to demolish the existing former Edgewater Hotel and build a much larger 150-room, $70 million resort hotel. But Averill has since filed documents, actually a few weeks ago only, seeking a conditional use permit for a much smaller 52-room hotel that would utilize the existing building, but also add a 5-story wing on the south end of the property. That's the end that's closest to the entry to City Beach, where they would have expanded restaurants on the ground floor and 27 condominiums on the upper stories. The city planning staff has provided a series of comments on these new plans, and most significantly in their comments, they say that the project would better meet the city's comprehensive plan if they would relocate that condo, that 5-story condo tower, to the northern end of the property in order to preserve views as people arrive in inner City Beach, where, as it's currently proposed with that big 5-story unit, it would be right in your face. You probably wouldn't even see the lake as you were driving into City Beach. Other comments from the city on this revised proposal from Averill, they note that the building exceeds the city's height standard and that the site should identify a 10-foot-wide pedestrian easement on the southern property line and allow for a wider 12-foot path along the east line, and also provide for more parking. So far, all we've heard from Avril is one of their spokesmen said that they're evaluating these city comments. So that will be an ongoing story. Some more town news here. Construction on the East Bonner County Library's two-story expansion is going to begin this coming Monday. The expansion will add to the library's northwest corner, and the first floor of the new space will consist of a large meeting room and a cafe, while the second floor will expand the library's lifelong learning center and provide additional study and tutoring rooms. Also, there's some additional meeting rooms that are going to be in this expansion. It's estimated to cost $2.72 million and is being accomplished with donation and local sales tax. It's not taking any of the library levy money. So that's actually, our library is an amazing facility, actually.
It really is, especially for the size community we are, to have such a resource that it's a fantastic place. And you don't appreciate something till you lose it, being someone who frequently attends meetings in those meeting rooms. And we've gotten the word for a couple of the groups that we've got to relocate between October and March.
While that construction is underway, because the meeting rooms that they currently have are going to be used for offices.
Right.
Yeah. So that's going to be a minor disruption in order to get this big expansion built. And I'm excited about it. They're going to have a cafe there, too. So they're kind of exploring what it is the public really wants at the library. And I think the library's certainly serving a great function here in our town. Also in new construction news, Idaho Transportation Department crews are building a new turn lane for northbound traffic on Highway 95 at the very busy East Dufferin Road intersection. So drivers on Highway 95 are warned of possible delays right there. Construction is coming before a new traffic signal that's planned for the intersection for late spring or early summer of next year. Also locally, independent candidate Steve Johnson officially kicked off his campaign seeking the District 1 Idaho Senate seat. That's the seat currently held by Jim Woodward, but which was in the Republican primary, won by nominee Scott Herndon. So in that race, it will be Steve Johnson facing Scott Herndon in the November 3rd general election. Johnson's a retired educator, farmer, rancher, and local business owner, and he's lived on the family farm in Sagal since 1957. The campaign kicked off Tuesday with a gathering of his supporters at Heartwood Center. And this is actually a rerun. Johnson and Herndon faced off previously in 2022 when Johnson ran as an independent, but as a write-in. And as a write-in, he garnered 41% of the vote in 2022 to Herndon's 59%. So it's going to be interesting to see how this election goes with Johnson's name actually on the ballot this time.
Yeah, I think, was Herndon the incumbent at that time?
Herndon in 2022... No, Herndon, I think, had just beaten...
He had just beaten out the...
Woodward.
Woodward in the primary.
Yeah, in the primary, yeah. And then, of course, Woodward came back in 2024 and beat Herndon. Right. And then Herndon in 2026 has beaten Woodward again. So those guys have been trading...
the perennial candidates.
Yeah, well, trading the seat there. And in statewide news, the Idaho Capital Sun reported this week that voter data shows the number of Republican voters moving from other states to Idaho dwarfs the number of Democrats moving here from other states. This data refutes a kind of a common myth that's been passed around Idaho that liberals are moving here and fueling the out-of-state growth and that they're threatening to turn Idaho blue or purple, according to the Capital Sun. And of course, we do hear that around here as well. But according to the Idaho Secretary of State's data on party affiliation of 118,702 current Idaho voters who have moved here from other states, 65% of those are registered Republicans, while only 12% of those are registered Democrats. The other 23% are either unaffiliated or members of third parties, such as the Libertarian or Constitution parties. Of that total, 118,000 that recently arrived here, nearly 40,000 of those are from California. And of the Californians moving to Idaho, 75% of those are Republicans. So, I mean, the numbers don't support the idea that a bunch of liberals are moving here.
And those numbers are pretty solid over time. I remember hearing or reading a similar study about a year or two ago.
Yes, right. So anyway, that was in this week's Idaho Capital Sun. And again, locally, I'll throw out a little bit of information that about our happenings this week. The festival's week two is underway, and tonight the band Switchfoot is playing. On Saturday, Rick Springfield is playing. He's a big name from the 80s
Blast
and 90s.
From the past.
Yeah. And then the grand finale on Sunday is the film How to Train Your Dragon 2, and it'll be accompanied by the Festival at Sandpoint Orchestra. And have you attended any of those?
I have. I've done the grand finales with the movie and the symphony, and they work actually very well.
Yeah. It's actually pretty terrific. And if folks haven't done that, it's you go, the big film is up on the stage there, above the stage, actually, and on the stage is the orchestra, and the orchestra is playing. You're watching the film, and every once in a while you realize, hey, there's live music that's accompanying the film, and then you switch and watch the orchestra. It's actually a really very cool way to...
Yeah, they bring in a special version of the movie without the soundtrack, and the orchestra provides that sound.
Yes. So if you haven't checked that out, it's definitely worth checking out. It's a great thing to take kids to, actually, that particular film. Also this weekend and kicking off tomorrow is the annual Arts and Crafts Fair. It'll be on 2nd and Main. They close the streets for that. It's put on the Pondere Arts Council. Well, at the fairgrounds tonight and tomorrow, it's the annual Bonner County Rodeo that's happening. And we're right here. This is like peak summer happening in Sandpoint right now. Unfortunately, with all that smoke occurring, it's kind of putting a damper on things, I think. Well, let's circle back on the downtown parking question. I talked about a couple of these stories in a little bit more depth. Now, of course, we haven't reported on these ourselves, so we're going to be speaking from what we what we glean from the reporting that's been out there by both the Bonner County Daily Bee and the Sandpoint Reader.
And anecdotal experience.
And anecdotal experience, because we're both downtown quite a bit.
Right. Yeah. I think the important thing to underline there is the 2-hour parking restriction, which has been in place since forever, doesn't go away. It's still there. There's still a 2-hour parking restriction. It's simply that you don't go to a kiosk to put a code in to start your timeline. There will be people out enforcing it that will be monitoring the cars other way via visual cues. So keep your car there less than 2 hours if you want to avoid a ticket.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, and that didn't change with the kiosk. The only thing that changed with the kiosk is that you were supposed to go to the kiosk and put your license plate in.
That and the kiosk allowed folks to extend the 2 hours, which without the kiosk now, that can happen via an app. But I think anecdotally, again, most people, unless they're working downtown, if they're coming to shop or do other things during the day, they're covered by the 2-hour limit. Or if they're not, they can go to the city lot or one of the outlying lots that are still free.
Right. Yeah, there are. We should make that point. You do have to pay to be in the city lot or have one of the passes. Mm-hmm. It's $20. For a city resident, you got to live inside the city limits, or $35 to get a pass if you're a county resident. I did watch a bit of the council meeting to see what the commentary would be, and they did only have a few people that got up and argued against having any kind of paid parking whatsoever. There was one commenter that got up and said, "Hey, I don't know if these people live in the city, but I live in the city and I support you because, in the city, people pay quite a bit more in property taxes. And those taxes support parking lots and fire and police and street repairs and all the expenses that the city undertakes that people coming to use the city from Bonner County don't pay anything towards.
Right.
And that was a point that the mayor made on Wednesday as well. But it sounds like we're going to be continuing. There will be paid parking at the city lots, but on the street, the kiosks are going to go away, and you'll have the opportunity. It's actually an improvement.
Yeah.
You'll be able to add some time. Let's say you're at a hair appointment and you don't get done and within 2 hours. You could go on to an app that has yet to be set up, but you'll be able to go on to an app and add some time.
And if you think you're going to be more than 2 hours there, the 2-hour limit is really the core business area. There are substantial amounts of streets in downtown that are 3-hour and 4-hour limit.
And no limit.
Northwest of the hospital, there's the parking lot at Alder and 3rd, between 3rd and 4th, north of Alder, that's free use and really convenient to most of downtown.
Yeah. Yeah. So So that's one of the big stories from the week. I'd say the other big story here locally has been the plans by Averill Hospitality being scaled back quite a bit. And these initial comments from the city point out a bunch of things that actually changed in these revised plans. Now, since we're segueing from parking, I will mention that Averill has put up signs on the Edgewater parking lot. The hotel's currently closed because they're preparing to do either. They were preparing to demolish it under the old plan. Under the new plan, doesn't sound like that's the case. They're going to keep it and renovate it. But right now, there are signs there that say you can park there for free if you have a 7B license plate. Right. I don't know if you spotted those.
I heard about those. I haven't been over to visually verify that, but I have heard that. Yes,
I verified and parked there as well.
Well, good. Well, it makes sense to put it into use while they're figuring out what to do with the construction. It's really scaled back a third the number of units, and now a third of the units will be condos. It strikes me as much of a condominium development as a hotel development, and an upscale one at that. It sounds like, which shifts, I think, the focus on it, and from a business standpoint, having been in the hotel business for many years before moving to Sandpoint, hard to recoup your investment with only 59 rooms. So adding those 27 condos gives them a way to recoup some of that initial build-in money.
Yeah, I got to think that this is being driven by, I think there's been reported quite a bit that they were having trouble lining up the big financing you need, over $70 million. This is going to scale that back, that financial need back quite a bit. And the condos, 27 condos are probably going to sell for $1 million plus each,
I'm sure. We'd be guessing, but, the condos at the season 12, 15 years ago were going for $1 million plus. So it'd be hard to imagine these would be any less, especially given the increased amenities that will be available to the residents.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And And assuming they upscale the hotel, one thing that does get lost in this, I think, looking at it from the standpoint of our hospitality and tourism industry here, the original plan, which was much larger, included a conference center. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that in the current plan.
I haven't seen that. I haven't seen the details of the plans, but it's hard to imagine, given the footprint of the hotel and the number of units, that they would include a conference center, which does detract from the general use of it, and also the fewer number of guests moving through means fewer people coming into Sandpoint that drive the economy. Part of the economic reason or benefit for having the development there at City Beach for the city is to bring in people from out of town that'll buy things and pay those taxes, eat in the restaurants.
And do our shops and go up and ski at Schweitzer or rent a boat on the lake, all those things that tourists do here that drive a big chunk of our economy will be reduced under this plan. So, and of course, I'd say that the local sentiment has been strongly against the original plan to build a much larger resort there. But those economic benefits to the larger hotel are something that's going to be scaled back with this smaller hotel as well.
Also scaled back will be their parking requirements. Speaking of parking.
Yes. And I don't have that number in front of me, but the city did point out that the plan as it stands right now, the revised plan, is still going to lack parking. So there's going to be a parking question for them to either build a structure so they can get more parking on site. The maps show the footprint of the hotel staying essentially just the same it is. So the parking area will remain pretty much the way it is right now. And there's not enough spots there to accommodate the hotel rooms they have plus 27 more condos where they need longer-term parking, presumably, because a lot of those people might be full-time residents. So, there's a lot of things that are going to have to be worked out here between Averill.
You would think for long-term residents, a garage-style structure would be desirable.
Yes, in order to have a place to put their vehicle through the whole seasons, I guess. And, what else was on your radar for this week, Phil?
I think those are the big stories. I really want to say about the Dufferin Road. It's overdue. it'll be a Band-Aid, as down the road, the news story went into length about the expansion of the highway, including off-ramps there, eventually a controlled interchange at the Duford Road. So the light will be temporary, but a much-needed temporary solution is someone who frequently goes to Round Lake or to the county transfer station there. Turning back on 95 is almost as bad there as trying to get on 95 from Lakeshore.
Yeah, and you know that, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Every day that gets worse.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you how that's working for you. You live on Lakeshore, so when you come into town, you now have to make a mandatory right turn and go and use that turnabout.
That was long overdue, too. That intersection was so dangerous, people turning left, that even now with that mandatory right, there are still people get to the end of the merge lane and then try to turn a U-turn there, and it's so dangerous.
No.
But that has helped, although over time, that just gets more and more congested, doing that U-turn about a quarter mile down, turning into the middle lane, turning off to the far left and coming back. When the traffic's heavy in the morning, you can wait a long time in those lines just to execute all those turns. Eventually, they need some controlled interchange or light.
So when you are now, say, southbound on 95 and you're waiting to get into the turnabout,
right?
Does that line get too long and back up traffic all the way?
The line to turn in will get sometimes 3 or 4 deep, which doesn't sound like much, but the steady stream of cars coming north at 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning produces very few gaps, mm-hmm. Because the one controlled spot is still a mile and a half down the road at the light by the Conoco station. And with people turning off of Bottle Bay Road, that fills in. So you can wait a long time, even 2 or 3 cars deep, just to make that turn. And sometimes people get impatient and they make choices where there's not a very big gap and try to do that anyway. Mm-hmm. So impatience there can create a hazardous situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of wonder if we just moved the big hazard spot from the intersection down a quarter mile.
Yeah, in some ways we've moved it down and we've eliminated the hazard from lanes going two ways to lanes going one way, but still the hazard's there. And mm-hmm. ultimately, the solution's going to be a more controlled intersection with a light or with creating an on-ramp that goes down to a controlled access interchange if they're going to build out the highway any further. And traffic continues to increase. If we grow more condo units here, we grow more people coming into town, then we have more traffic. Mm-hmm. And it just continues on to get worse.
Yeah, and that's the place you see it the most, I think, is the people coming into town across that long bridge. So we have just a few minutes left. I thought I'd throw out one story that's kind of what I'd consider kind of a developing story that people might be interested in following, is that for more than 2 years, representatives of various user groups, motorized recreation groups, mountain bikers, conservation organizations, timber companies, sportsmen, landowners, have been working in a collaborative process called the Idaho Panhandle Public Lands Initiative to develop a shared vision for the future of public lands here in Bonner and Boundary County. And they have a proposal now that's pretty well put together. It includes such things as establishing a Selkirk Crest National Recreation Area of approximately a little over 32,000 acres to protect many of the Selkirk's most iconic lakes right up there on the crest where we have all those beautiful Cirque lakes. And I think included in that area is Long Canyon, mm-hmm. Which has been maintained as a roadless area and has been going way back to the rare process in the 1980s, was identified as a potential wilderness. it's part of that is actually designating about 39,000 acres of new wilderness along the Selkirk Crest. The proposal would add about 16,900 acres to the Samuel Priest Wilderness, which would extend protection to the roadless lands that are on the Idaho side of the border, where the Samuel Priest mm-hmm. wilderness kind of ends right now. It would designate about 20 miles of the upper Priest River as a wild and scenic river, protecting one of the Idaho's. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know about that upper river, but it's a gorgeous hike up there.
A real gem.
Yeah. It would create new opportunities for motorized recreation through a targeted trail and road designations. And according to this, would also provide habitat protections for wildlife, And would designate approximately 5,200 acres between wilderness and private lands to be actively managed general forest to help reduce wildfire risks, and reduce and provide management flexibility. There'd be some land exchanges and land transfers that had to have to take place. And as former ED of the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness, it's kind of the glaring omission in this.
Well, it's not a finished proposal yet. When the Idaho Public Lands Initiative, IPLI, began about 3 years ago, the vision was to create a landscape approach to North Idaho, the public lands, the Forest Service, BLM, north of Lake Pend'Oreille and north of the Pend'Oreille River, being a considered unit to settle questions of recommended wilderness, travel management, recreation across that broad landscape. So the state they're at right now is they've settled more or less on about half of the landscape. The remaining work that needs to be done is in the Cabinet Mountains and the Purcells, essentially things that are east of I-95. And this is great progress because there were some real thorny issues in the Selkirks with regards to where would wilderness be appropriate, where would travel management be appropriate. The key, we use the word travel management, the key questions there being snowmobiling in the winter, summer motorized use, summer mechanized use of mountain bikes, and the Selkirk Crest is highly desirable for all of those things. So this approach has taken the Selkirk Crest and created the potential for wilderness, a wilderness recommendation that's north of, I think it's Harrison Lake is the breaking point, or right around there. And that would become wilderness. South of that would become a National Recreation Unit. Every National Recreation Unit across the country is dependent on the piece of legislation that enables it. But in this case, it would contain high-value conservation measures, but include the ability for mountain bikes in the summer and snowmobile use in the winter. A similar approach to the cabinets needs to be settled yet to include the Scotchman Peaks proposed wilderness and to determine the travel management status of other areas that are really near and dear to the snowmobile community north of the Scotchman Peaks and the potential for mountain bikes, particularly in the B-top, road-top, round-top roadless area that have some fantastic loops. So there's great potential across the landscape. The work that the IPLI group is doing is ongoing and hopefully will continue to include the discussions for those areas that are necessary to bring them into the proposal. It's an interesting time being midterm in a president's cycle and literally just 2 months from the midterm elections. This session of Congress ends in January. The next one will begin. We don't yet know the makeup of Congress. Pretty well assured the Idaho delegation will continue to approach public lands much the way that they have, whether Senator Risch stays in office and stays on the Germaine Committee or someone replaces him. We know that Westerners value their public lands. We know Idahoans value public lands. We know we want to see the greatest good for everyone, and we want to take a community collaborative approach to any legislative proposal. And this ultimately to enact the wilderness legislation to create the national recreation areas requires that act of Congress. It will require the active support from the Idaho delegation. And the politicians that have been in office or run for office over the years have shown a strong interest in representing the constituent public through the collaborative process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that process is going to be ongoing. I know the Idaho Conservation League it participated in it, and I think the ICL is generally supportive of it. I do know some other conservation groups have some critique of it on it. So there's going to be quite a bit of discussion on this, and we are going to get. I'm trying to arrange a morning show with some of the folks from the ICL to talk more about this, and probably we'll be doing that in a month or so. So, and it is, as you mentioned, Phil, an interesting time.
These are interesting times we live in.
Yeah, politically. So for something like this to actually take hold.
If we're going to cover national news, we'd need the rest of the morning, next 2.5 hours.
And we are over our time as it stands. So, folks, that is this week's News of the Week. Thank you for listening today. And we're going to go back to Otto's Eclectic Mix. Have a great weekend and a great week to come.